Welcome to the Republic of Middle-Aged Men. We have had a little break, but we are back just in time to finish a book. Welcome to Lachlan and Ruben, who joins us as usual. Tonight I am drinking Pepsi Max vanilla flavour. Not only does it have artificial sugar, it has artificial vanilla. So I won't die fat, I'll just die of cancer.
No, it's okay. No real vanilla beans were harmed in the making of that beverage.
You just made me realise something. Is this vegan friendly? Probably I can't not. See anything on there about it being approved by vegans. Should be okay. If I suddenly feel weird, I'll stop drinking it. How about you, Lachlan? Oh, I like the shirt, by the way. For those listening on audio, Lachlan is wearing the Socrates with a pink beard shirt and turtle shell sunglasses.
Well, you know, I figured for our sort of like finale episode of this, I had to represent for Socrates. So he gets a final hurrah tonight.
That's a missed opportunity. I have a Socrates shirt somewhere, and I think Ruben does too.
I do, yeah.
We should pause and go and put our shirts on. I'm up for it. You are. Are you up to it, Rubes?
Yeah, do it.
All right. We'll be right back. I'm going to pause and we'll change our shirts again. Okay, we're back. So, which way do I go? This way. Got the Socrates and Aristotle shirt. Playing basketball, which is appropriate with my hat. Compliments of nice. Mr. Rift. Thank you. Rubes, let's see yours.
Oh, yeah, I got the Matrix, Aristotle, and Socrates one.
Yeah, nice. There we go. Wearing our shirts in honor of the great man.
Good.
Cool. So what are you drinking there, Rubes?
Gin and tonic.
G&T.
The drink of colonialists.
Isn't that tea?
No. You've got to... Hit back the malaria with the quinine in your tonic water, mate. That's what it's all about.
Okay. Very good. Well, I reckon we jump straight in. For those reading along at home on the Amazon edition book that we recommended, we are on page 30 on what I would say is the second paragraph of page 30. So, let's just jump straight in, fellas. So, I'll read this paragraph and we'll keep going. Okay. Friends, who would have acquitted me? I would also like to talk to you, with you about the thing which has come to pass while the magistrates are busy, and before I go to the place at which I must die. Stay then a little, for we may as well talk with one another while there is time. You are my friends, and I should like to show you the meaning of this event which has happened to me. O my judges, for you I may truly call judges, I should like to tell you of a wonderful circumstance. Hitherto, the divine faculty of which the internal oracle is the source has constantly been in the habit of opposing me even about trifles, if I was going to make a slip or error in any matter, and now, as you see, there has come upon me that which may be thought, and is generally believed to be, the last and worst evil. But the oracle made no sign of opposition, either when I was leaving my house in the morning, or when I was on my way to the court, or while I was speaking, at anything which I was going to say. And yet I have often been stopped in the middle of a speech, but now in nothing I either said or did touching the matter in hand, has the oracle opposed me. What do I take to be the explanation of this silence? I will tell you, it is an intimation that what has happened to me is good, and that those of us who think that death is an evil are in error. For the customary sign would surely have opposed me had I been going to evil and not to good. There you go.
Well, that's a pretty good attitude, having been just sort of handed down a death sentence, right? But yeah, rings true, I think, in the sense of the philosophy. I suppose he's kind of, you know, preached about this sort of stuff and what he's been talking about with the oracle and all that sort of thing. So, I guess he's walking the talk now. He doesn't sound like he is sort of stressed or phased about it.
Hmm. But it's not even him. He's referring to that spirit within him or thing within him, yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, he's like, whatever this thing is that talks to me, he's like, I trust it and it didn't stop me, so this must be a good thing.
Interesting. Yeah, I must be on the right path. Yeah.
Interesting. I guess, suppose if you were to look at it as his conscience, then perhaps, yeah. But I think what he's talking about here might be a little bit more than a conscience.
Hmm.
Well, I think, yeah, he seems to feel that he's had the inside word of the divine or something to kind of push him in a direction, right? So it's, you know, I suppose if you're looking at logic, it's sort of say, if I've had this my whole life, you know, when I've been stepping off track or something like that, that sort of stream of consciousness would come in and contradict me or something like that to challenge what I was going to do. And it's not challenging me now. So I feel confident walking towards death that it must be a good thing.
Yeah, true. And I think from memory, you just got done saying that, well, death, we don't know what it is. So like, it could be bad, it could be in the middle. Could be good.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. I think he talks about that a bit more in the next paragraph too, but right. He's certainly quoted that already to sort of say that, you know, you're assuming death's a bad thing, but nobody who's died has come back to talk to us about it, to tell us whether it's good or bad. So, you know, how can you make an assumption like that?
Yeah.
Mm.
It's interesting too that the role of the voice is to just say what not to do.
Yeah, okay.
Hmm.
So it's still up to him to figure out what he should do. But
he's got to contemplate things and then he'll just get a little bit of a tingle if it's the wrong thing.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I think that's interesting because it shows he still needs to think it through. It's not like he's listening to a voice telling him what to do. It's just as he's doing things or about to do things, the voice speaks up if it's like not a good thing to do or if it's not true. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, or just too far off track or something. Because like the way he sort of says it, it's as though it lets him get into it. And it's like, okay, you haven't realized this on your own, Socrates. I'm going to let you know right now, that's not the right thing, right?
Yeah.
Go back and think some more or, you know, try a different angle.
What do you think about him saying that, his inference from all of this is that those who think that death is evil are in error? Like, could he mean that my death is not evil, or is he making like a much stronger sort of metaphysical statement that death is not evil?
I think he's doing the latter.
Yeah, 100%. Like he's saying because it's not prompting me to not go there, therefore it can't be evil. Because it only prompts me to not go to things that are evil.
All right. So death is sort of either neutral or it's part of the natural order or something. Like, obviously, it doesn't go into that kind of detail, but there are a couple of inferences from that. That's interesting, that was what he believed.
I think the thing is, too, you know, if you remember with the Republic, they were talking about, it's funny, I just said, like, nobody knows what happens, but I think they were talking about somebody who
came back,
and they were talking about the fates and the way they felt the afterlife worked, right? And,
reincarnation, you know, forgetting and all that.
Yeah, and the river and all that sort of business they were sort of talking about. And I guess, you know, he's sort of saying, you know, like if that's what awaits me, like how is that necessarily a bad thing? Yeah. You know, it's... even if it's not necessarily a good, it's a neutral as much as anything. You know what I mean? Reset and try again in the way they were talking, but
yeah, part of the cycle or something.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. What else is in there? What does he mean when he's having to go at people saying, like, they're judges? Where he goes, "Oh, my judges, for you, I may truly call judges." Is he, like, saying, "Yeah, you're judging me"?
I think he's just calling them to account that, you know, you just letting you, reminding you guys, you're the ones who've put me in this place, you know? They could have... they could have stopped it, I guess. Because I remember he was sort of saying that the vote wasn't actually as you know, overwhelming as what he thought. He was like, "Oh, I had a bit more chance in that than what I was thinking at the start. You know, it's a lot closer. I might have been able to swing that one."
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I guess you got to think about it. I mean, I don't think he actually wants to die, but he's accepting his fate. But yeah, at the same time,
you can kind of see how Stoicism is sort of kind of something that came out of his school of thought.
Hmm. I think he would have been quite happy to keep living, right? It's not like he wants to die. And so I think he's just sort of saying, "Well, you know, you guys have put me here, so..." Just reminding you of that fact, you know, you are my judges.
Yeah.
Make sure you understand what you've done.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
All right, well, let's keep on going.
Sounds good.
"Let us reflect in another way, and we shall see that there is great reason to hope that death is a good, for one of two things. Either death is a state of nothingness and utter unconsciousness, or, as men say, there is a change and migration of the soul from this world to another. Now, if you suppose that there is no consciousness, but a sleep like the sleep of him who is undisturbed even by dreams, death will be an unspeakable gain. For if a person were to select the night in which his sleep was undisturbed even by dreams, and were to compare with this the other days and nights of his life, and then were to tell us how many days and nights he had passed in the course of his life better and more pleasantly than this one, I think that any man, I will not say a private man, but even the great king, will not find many such days or nights when compared with the others. Now if death be of such a nature, I say that to die is gain, for eternity is then only a single night. But if death is a journey to another place, and there, as men say, all the dead abide, what good, O my friends and judges, can be greater than this? If indeed, when the pilgrim arrives in the world below, he is delivered from the professors of justice in this world, and finds the true judges, who are said to give judgment there, Minos and Rhadamanthus, and Achaeus and Triptolemus, and other sons of God who were righteous in their own life, that pilgrimage will be worth making. What would not a man give if he might converse with Orpheus and Messias and Hesiod and Homer? Nay, if this be true, let me die again and again. I myself, too, shall have a wonderful interest in their meeting and conversing with Palamedes and Ajax, the son of Telamon, and any other ancient hero who has suffered death through an unjust judgment. And there will be no small pleasure, as I think, in comparing my own sufferings with theirs. Above all, I shall then be able to continue my search into true and false knowledge, as in this world, so also in the next, and I shall find out who is wise, and who pretends to be wise, and is not. What would not a man give, O judges, to be able to examine the leader of the great Trojan expedition, or Odysseus, or Sisyphus, or numberless others, men and women too? What infinite delight would there be in conversing with them, and asking them questions? In another world, they do not put a man to death for asking questions. Assuredly not. For besides being happier than we are, they will be immortal if what is said is true.
I think he's being a tad... He's being very optimistic at this point, I think.
Yeah, I think the bit about the endless and restful sleep, I think, is just trying to rub the good oil there a little bit too hard.
Yeah, I thought the same. I'm like, well, I mean, a good sleep is only a good sleep if you wake up and get to enjoy the benefits of a good sleep. I mean, if you don't know you're sleeping and you never wake up, that's just nothing. I mean, that's... Yeah. I suppose that I get the best you could say is it's not painful. I suppose it's just nothing.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think the second part makes a lot more sort of sense when you can see Socrates just sort of thinking about the possibility, basically continuing his work.
Well, that's fair. I mean, the fair assumption is like if you go on to another place, then you would assume other people that go on to another place would also be there.
Hmm.
So what would not be great about meeting all of these people?
Hmm.
Yeah, and I guess like, you know, thinking about that hypothetically, you're likely to have a much more honest conversation, you might sort of say, because there's nothing to gain or lose at that point in time, right? That the life has been lived and mistakes have been made or winnings have been made or whatever it may well be, right? And it's a case of history now. So it's not really opinion, it's more about fact. And
yeah.
So how did that work, you know? And
that's true. And he was, but once again, he's having a bit of a dig, right? He's like,
oh, totally.
In another world, they do not put a man to death for asking questions.
Yeah, I found that really funny.
Oh, and he talks about meeting any other ancient hero who has suffered death through an unjust judgment.
Yeah.
He's already left himself onto the pedestal slightly there, but, you know.
Fair enough. I'm not adverse to it, but it is quite funny.
Mm.
It's true to his character too. Like, he would want to talk to Trojans and everything else. I'm like, yes, and Homer.
Yeah,
like, I'd like to talk to Homer as well.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. Yeah, I think it's beautiful, that part.
Yeah.
I apologize to anyone listening who knows how to say those names with proper pronunciation. I gave it a red hot crack, but
I think you did pretty good on the hop there, mate. Not too bad at all.
All right. Are we comfortable with that? Are we happy to move on?
Yeah, go for it.
Yep. Roll. All right, cool. Wherefore, O judges, be of good cheer about death, and know of a certainty that no evil can happen to a good man, either in life or after death. He and his are not neglected by the gods, nor has my own approaching end happened by mere chance. But I see clearly that the time had arrived when it was better for me to die and be released from trouble, wherefore the oracle gave no sign. For which reason, also, I am not angry with my condemners or with my accusers. They have done me no harm, although they did not mean to do me any good, and for this I may gently blame them. Interesting. Gently blame them.
Yeah.
That reminds me when someone sends you an email. A gentle reminder to please do this.
That's exactly what it is.
Like, pretty sure that's a nice way of saying hurry up.
Yeah.
He's like, basically like, you guys can't hurt me, but you certainly didn't mean to help me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Sin of omission, maybe.
Yeah.
It's interesting that he says no evil can happen to a good man.
Well, I think, you know, he, you know, even in that previous paragraph when we're talking about him like being maybe a pilgrim on the journey and all that sort of thing. You know, and I know from the work we did in Republic. I think some of that expectation is like similar to like the Egyptians, where maybe where like your soul is kind of weighed, you know, were you a good man, were you a bad man, and you know, what's going to happen to you accordingly. And I think he's, you know, quite clear in his own mind that he's been a good man, right? And tried to do good, tried to live according to what he feels is a sound philosophy and, you know, set of morals and all that sort of thing. And so, like, I think he's sort of like walking into that space saying, I'm a good man, so I've got nothing to fear, you know? So what evil can befell a good man, you know? So sticking to his philosophy right by the end, I think.
Well, I'm going to read the last two paragraphs together because the last paragraph is a sentence. And we'll discuss that. So,
yep.
Here we go. Still, I have a favor to ask of them. When my sons are grown up, I would ask you, O my friends, to punish them. And I would have you trouble them, as I've troubled you, if they seem to care about riches or anything more than about virtue. Or if they pretend to be something when they are really nothing, then reprove them, as I've reproved you for not caring about that for which they ought to care, and thinking that they are something when they are really nothing. And if you do this, both I and my sons will have received justice at your hands. The hour of departure has arrived, and we go our ways, I to die and you to live. Which is better, God only knows.
Hmm. You know, it's quite ironic the bit about his sons, given that history shows that they were not great people in the end. So maybe no one followed through with the questioning of Socrates, and maybe they should have.
Yeah.
Possible. I mean, you think Plato would have had a go.
Yeah, maybe they're just like completely different cats, you know what I mean? Like, just not like Plato.
Didn't Plato basically kind of get into politics at some point? He tried to advise a king and it went real bad.
Not sure.
Something like that.
I think it was Aristotle, though, who said that Socrates' sons were idiots. I'm pretty sure it was.
You could be right. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a guy on my shirt here.
Yeah.
Yep.
But
strangely, that book that I got is called Socrates' Children.
Hmm.
So, here it is here.
Is that a subtle way of telling you that you have a lot to learn?
Potentially.
Yeah. No, I have heard of, I've heard philosophy referred to as basically two streams that flow on from Plato and Aristotle. Mm. So I suppose Socrates' children would be an appropriate way to study philosophy. I don't know. But yeah. I really like this last little bit. Just the idea in itself of, he really sums up what he believes, which is that you need to value virtue over riches or anything else. So that's what he wants for his kids.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed too is that when he goes on, what is it, if they pretend to be something that they're nothing, that they're not, that's almost like straight out of Epictetus, isn't it? There was a couple of paragraphs in the Enchiridion that which very much mirror that idea, don't they?
Yeah, for sure. Because it's just deception, right? So if you're seeking virtue and truth, you can't be doing that.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Would you want that for your kids? Would you, I mean, you know, like, I don't care if you're rich or poor, as long as you're doing the right thing. I mean, it's easy to say, but...
Well, I think it's just possible. If you're... Rich or poor, it should be a byproduct of being a good person, I think is what he's saying. And
But I mean, he basically chose poverty. Like, he was not adverse to poverty because he felt that virtue was more important, right?
Mm.
I mean, that's for him. But
yeah,
to put that to someone else is a different question.
I think it's the right angle for your kids to aim to be virtuous and good, and to promote that. I mean, I even try to promote it at work. When I do reports or investigations, I don't try to hide anything. I try to be just, here's the truth, here's the facts. And, you know, when I get challenged about that, one of the things I say is the truth will set you free. It's like, yeah. You just got to accept that they're the facts and act on those things, because if you don't, it's just going to become worse.
I do, yeah. I do think that any other approach just leads to chaos. I think that, I think that's probably true. I mean, I'm not going to try to support that or explicate that in an argument right now, but that's what I believe.
Yeah. Well, we did it. That's another one that we've got through together. Happy days. Let's head on up to the pub, I reckon. Let's do it. All right, so overall thoughts about the book. Let's just talk about the different ideas, what we got out of it, I guess. Anyone want to go first? I don't mind if it's me or if it's someone else.
Well, I mean, I've said multiple times how much I love this little piece of writing and how much, like, the number of times I've read it. I think for me, what I really like about it is the courage. To me, that whole thing, the speech, the acceptance of death, is like a real example of an act of courage. Like, really, it's a dude who's got a belief system and he's going to stick to it to the end no matter what. And I don't know, there's something inspiring about that, whether he's right or wrong about some of the things that he believes and the implications or the inferences from that. I don't know, but that's what I really like about it. Someone who's willing to take what he believes to the nth degree and follow it right to the end.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with that. It's, yeah. I mean, he died the same way he lived. Basically, I mean, you could sort of say that this whole court case has been orchestrated to make him beg and kowtow to, you know, these other people to try and, I don't know, make him, you know, go back on his word, to beg for his life and go back on it. And the fact that he stands fast and accepts his fate more or less willingly. Yeah, I think, like Rube says, it's incredibly brave and inspiring in that sort of sense. And the fact that he can, like, still have a sense of humor about it and, like, rip into some of these guys. I mean, there's a part about, you know, if we're talking about what my punishment should be, you know, you should put me in the, what was it, Puritanium or whatever it was, which was like, you know, you should be feasting me like a champion of the Olympics and keeping me, you know, in the way to which I've become accustomed, because I'm here doing the good for all you people here, right? So I love the fact that, you know, he's getting, you know, going to be put to death or whatever, and he's still, like, just laying that out, just saying, you're joking, yeah, aren't you?
Yeah. Still cracking jokes.
Yeah,
it's audacious. It's great.
Yep. That is.
What do you think, Terry?
I agree with the courage. I agree with being, like, having the sense of humor and the wit. The part that I still go a little bit surprised at is, I wonder, like, if he'd gone in more aggressive to still stay with the truth, but to justify having spoken the truth at all times, would it have been enough to swing the crowd? Like, he kind of, it feels like he went in already knowing what the outcome was going to be.
Yeah, just use a little bit of persuasive language, but truthful persuasive language. Correct. Got it over the line. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe not. Maybe by doing that, he's proving the people right, because he would start persuading the jury and then they'd be able to go, see, now he's tricking you with fancy words and blah, blah, blah. So that's the only question mark I have for it, really, is, you know, why didn't he go a bit harder to defend his life? But maybe in his mind, that wasn't important. What was hard was, like, what was important was defending, like, the truth.
That's what I was going to say. I think that's what it is, if I had to hazard a guess. That because he's defending a higher order thing than himself, he's like, I'm not what's important. What's important here is representing the truth. So I'm wondering if that has something to do with it. But, yeah, I don't know.
I wonder if it's also like a thought around, like, this is almost like my greatest audience. And so this is my chance to deliver a lesson, and that's going to have so much punctuation to it because I'm giving my life for this lesson, that it's almost like this is what my life's work is, in a way. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Yeah, he's leading by example. Like, it's easy to say you should do X and Y, but for someone to actually live it to the end and demonstrate it like that is a much more powerful message, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think the other thing, I think one of the reasons that I really liked this and sort of came to it at the time that I did was just the idea, or just the example of someone speaking the truth contrary to public opinion and at such a high cost. Well, it goes kind of back to what I was saying about courage, but I do feel like that's something that is becoming more and more likely in our day and age. But I might be a little bit, I might be being a little bit melodramatic there, but I think some of the things we've seen and done sort of in the last couple of years makes me think this kind of example is very important.
I think you're right. And yeah, dead set. I mean, it's probably more important now than ever, because, like, with cancel culture and all that sort of thing, the cost of speaking up with your opinion or your viewpoint is, if it's going against the grain, you know, you're putting yourself potentially in harm's way. So this it's actually a very relevant thing right now.
Yeah, the costs are getting higher. And if the cost for saying true things is getting higher and higher, that doesn't bode well for things more generally, in my opinion.
That's true, but we can only turn the dial back towards tolerance for truth if truth's spoken.
Yeah.
So the only way to beat it is to actually engage with it and beat it.
I think that's kind of what Solzhenitsyn said, for anybody who's interested.
Beat it. Michael Jackson. He did a cover of Solzhenitsyn one day.
Yeah, he was a big fan of Russian existentialist Michael Jackson.
Yeah. So I think that's a bit of a long draw on a bow, that one. Anyway.
All you have to do is beat it. That's it. Beat it.
Yeah. Look, otherwise, as something to read, fantastic. I love this dialogue format. It's so interesting. I gave several copies of this book out over the last couple of months. My 94-year-old grandmother started reading it while I was away with her a few weeks ago. She's a Anglican through and through, has never read any text outside of the Bible. And she was saying, oh, what's this? And so I talked to her about it a bit, and she's read probably half of the apology already, and she's like, oh, this is really interesting, and so we just started talking about it, and that was nice. My dad's starting to read it, so a couple of guys at work are reading it, so and I don't know, if we can all sort of distribute to three or four people, then all of a sudden there's lots of people starting to look at this and think these issues through, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I think so.
The next thing we need to decide, which we probably won't figure out here, is what we're going to read next.
Hmm.
So Ruben's had his turn with the apology. I don't remember who chose the first two. I think I chose the second one.
I chose the first one and the third one.
I think Lachlan gets a choice.
Well, I think I picked the Incaridian, actually.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was. That was his suggestion.
Yeah.
Well, if it's my turn, one moment, please, caller.
Oh, he's already made a decision.
I guarantee you I know what he's going to pick up.
I know what I want to read.
I bet I know what it is.
Okay, write it on a piece of paper.
You can say it. I don't think you're going to change your mind just because he said it first and prove him wrong. I don't believe you're that petty.
I want to read... Have you written it down?
Hang on. I've gone too slowly. I had to turn the tablet on.
Oh, dear, dear.
Oh, he's not even using paper. Bloody hell.
Yeah, I know. Yep, go for it.
Timaeus by Plato.
Oh, he's got Plato again.
I do. I want to read Timaeus because it's about Atlantis.
Of course.
What was your guess?
What was your guess, Lachlan?
Marcus Aurelius is
Meditations. Ooh. Yeah. See, I threw you guys left there.
You did.
Yeah. So that's what I want to read. I want to go down the Atlantis rabbit hole.
Yeah, I'm pumped for that.
That'd be heaps of fun. All right, well then that's it. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do the book on Atlantis next time. Because why not? It's fun.
Sure.
Don't know if we'll learn a lot, but it'll be fun to do. So.
My only other second guess was that you might have wanted to read some of that stuff from the... now I'm going to go forget him. Those old Egyptian texts on the alchemy and all that sort of stuff.
The Emerald Tablets, that sort of thing. Yeah, I'm actually reading the Kabbalion at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's...
Corpus Hermeticum or something.
Sorry?
Or maybe Corpus Hermeticum or something.
Mm. Yeah, there's lots of choices, but I think Timaeus is... That'll be fun.
All right.
Very good.
All right, well, let's wrap it up there. I'm keen to go play some Diablo 4 freaking beta. I think Rubes is as well. So to those listening, thank you for joining us for book 3 for our show, which is The Apology by Plato. And thanks for sticking it out with us over the last few months. It's taken us time to get through it, but life happens. And just like this series or season... middle-aged men weren't built in a day. So join us next season when we start on Timaeus. Thanks for listening. Lachlan Ruben. Good night. Thank you very much.
Thanks, boys.
Cheers. Catch up.
Bye.